Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani, and this evening on the panel, we have Sister Linda. We have Professor Amin Ra, Ernest McDride Jr., and Brother Mashinda. Our guest for this evening is Jay Asar Jubal. Jubal has been on the show many times, and every time he comes on, it's always a great outing. So I'm looking forward to this evening. So our topic tonight is repatriation to Africa. So Jerry, thanks for coming this
I'm
evening.
Right here.
Thanks for
thanks
coming
for
this
having.
Evening. Let's get started.
Okay.
All right.
Before we get into it too much, I want to recommend that you look up on YouTube or some other social media the name Arikana Chihombori. That last name is spelled Chihombori.
One more time. One more time.
Arikana, A-R-I. K-A-N-A, and the last name is Chihombori, C-H-I-H-O-M-B-O-R-I, that's one word. She is the former African Union ambassador to the United Nations, or to the United States, actually, and she is familiar with all parts of Africa as a result. And we should all listen to her as a prerequisite to my own urging people to start thinking about organizing to return to the continent. She, I think, is well versed in the situation in most of the countries in Africa, if not all of them. And she's encouraging the Europeans be put out of Africa, and that the system, neo-colonial systems that they imposed when they so-called granted independence after World War II to the African countries, that it's been nothing but a system of exploitation, and not only economic exploitation, but it's also political exploitation, because it left them with de facto control over the economies and the politics and the cultural systems in some cases all across Africa. And only now are some of these African countries beginning to wake up and realize how exploited they've been, and to try to evict that out of Africa. And a part of that struggle we see with Traore there in Burkina Faso and Mali, and also in Niger, and to some extent in Senegal and Ghana and Kenya, Uganda, they're waking up finally. And they're realizing that Africa is by far the richest continent on this earth, that they have all of the necessities to modernize and develop. And what they need is expertise from, I'm not saying the only thing, any expertise from outside of Africa, because many of their best, most brilliant scholars have left Africa and gone on to Europe or to here in the Americas. And that brain drain has got to be countered with the return of many of us, the Africans and the diaspora, to go back and start. I mean, it's I don't know how to put it exactly, but it's like a rebirth over there. And we need to, first of all, understand that what we've been dealing with here in America, not only that, but all Africans in the diaspora have been dealing with, is a system of racism. And it's a system whereby we've struggled. We used to call it the struggle back in the 60s and 70s. And this struggle was for what? Equality. We're always looking just to be equal, because we know if everything's equal, we're going to be superb. What we didn't understand and what we're now understanding, and at least I hope we are, is that white supremacy is something that the certain people, the people who hold the power in this country, on Europe, and in the places that they are, that they live, that they enjoy white supremacy. It's not something that they're willing to simply grant. And that's why we've had to struggle all of this time. I mean, since we arrived, and the first slave, I think, was sold in Jamestown, the first African, excuse me, in around 1520. And so that means that's more than 500 years ago. And since that time, we've been struggling and struggling for what? Equality. In a nutshell, that's what we've been struggling for. The civil rights movement back during the 60s with King and Malcolm and Malalana and all of them, that was about equality, of forcing this country to give us equality. And it's never happened. And it's never going to happen, because all of those struggles, those demonstrations, those marches we had, was all about all political. We're getting them to change their laws and their rules to accommodate us. And what we didn't seem to grasp, is that the fact that white supremacy is not a political idea at all. It's a biological problem. And this is what we have to understand and recognize. Look, these people are never, they've had all this time, we've been through slavery all those years, then Reconstruction, the so-called black codes, the Jim Crow, the Ku Klux Klan, and I don't know how many thousands and thousands of lynchings by black men, mostly men and women, by these white supremacists, and all of the race riots. I remember my father talked about when he was a kid in Atlanta. They had I think it was a 1908, 1906, somewhere back there. Atlanta, they burned down the black neighborhoods because those neighborhoods were thriving. And then it happened again in Illinois, I think it's Springfield, Illinois, and in 1908 or 9, somewhere back. And Chicago in 1919, and down here in Florida, Ocoee in 1920, and then we had Tulsa. We're all familiar with Tulsa. And then Rosewood after that, then Harlem in the 30s, and again in the 40s in Harlem. Then there was Watts. Some of us participated in that in 65, and again in L.A. in 92 after the Rodney King thing. And in between that was Detroit. And anyway, look, people, we've got to come to grips with the fact that white supremacy is a biological idea, and it's never going to change, because some of these white people like it. Some of them talk about equality, but we got to look at what our situation is. And the fact of the matter is after 500 years, we're still in what we call the struggle. We're still being victimized. Our prisons in this country are filled with us, people of color, and we're the majority of the prison population in this country. And yet we're a minority in terms of the population, and on and on. And even when you consider Africa, just to continue from where I left off last program about a month ago, is we got to go back just to the Berlin Conference in 1884, when they imposed all of those borders in Africa and created the 53 countries that are there in Africa today. And all of those were done by European colonizers, not by African people. There was no African at the conference. And this was like 3 or 4 month long conference. You know, nobody participated. And then they took colonial advantage over all of Africa, which is why they came to prosper. The European nations today make up, I think, 23 of the 30 top countries in the world today, all European countries, you know, because they sucked the wealth out of Africa and the Americas to a certain extent. And they didn't even take into consideration when they formed those borders that the African communal system was basically based on the extended family, that the head of that family was usually the chief of the tribe, and that they had various cultures and a system of communicating with each other between communities and settling disputes by elder councils, etc. All of that was not considered, taken in consideration by the colonial powers when they divided Africa up and split it up into these tiny little nations. And then set them to fighting, and they're still fighting each other, you know. And this is what has been happening, and only now, since the emergence of China as the manufacturing powerhouse in the world, leading economic system in the world, it's only then that Africa's beginning to wake up, because the Chinese are coming in saying, well, we don't want to dominate. Terry, what we want to do is help you develop the something that was not done by the European colonizers. All they wanted to do was take out all your minerals and your food and your people, but they didn't put nothing back in. And we're saying we still need your mineral, your food. But we're saying you can develop your own system, make your own factories, and we'll help you do that. And this is what's waking up Africa. And they still haven't evicted, even though they've begun, the European out of the system, the former colonialists out of the system. They've done it in Mali and Niger, as I mentioned, in Burkina Faso, and somewhat in Uganda, but it's still in place. In Kenya, Ghana is already saying they want African Americans come there to help develop. Kenya, I'm not Kenya. Senegal, I believe, is saying if you come there and proclaim the fact that you are an African, then you automatically are a citizen of that nation. So there's certain things that are in play as far as our return, the repatriation. And we shouldn't be afraid of it, because the pictures that we have of Africa have all been painted by Europeans. And all they've done is denigrate Africa, you know, talking about the jungle and illiteracy and starvation and constant warfare. Everything they've had to talk about Africa has been negative. And when have you ever heard them say anything positive about any African country? It just doesn't happen, because that would be undermining their sense of superiority, the so-called white superiority, which has been so dominant for us. So last time, you know, some of the brothers that commented after the presentation said that they rather make their way here in America, and I understand where they're coming from. But the fact remains that, look, you're not going to want the one big thing that you will not encounter when you go to Africa is racism. And if you live in the diaspora, and especially in the U.S. of A., then that's the biggest thing that you will encounter for your whole life is racism. So that's the gift of returning. And something that I personally experienced, not only just going to Africa, even when I went to Asia, I didn't even know what it was like to live in a country or community where racism just didn't exist. It was, I guess you could say, liberating. When I went first to Asia, I went to Japan, Korea, China, the Philippines. Wow, there was no racism. Do you know what that feels like? I don't know the word for it. But it felt like, my goodness, wow, it's great to just be yourself, be free and not worry about that aspect of your life. Whereas in the U.S., it's always there. It's separate housing. I remember going to a laundromat in Texas where my first child was born, and after a hurricane down there, not being able to use the laundromat, reserve white people. I mean, that's just one tiny example. It's a struggle that we've been in for 500 years here in the United States. When I spent my 7 years on this earth, I guess to one thing, white supremacy is not going to end. In fact, it's getting worse. As China rises and the U.S. starts losing its economic control over the world, it's resorting more and more to this military control. 800 bases scattered around the world, military bases, and more and more. And as they come down, then they start to show their true, I want to say colors, but actually it's their true lack of color. And that is to be just as racially dominant as possible. They move under the guise of white Christian nationalism. But hey, the term Christian throws us off, you know? We think, well, you know, at least they believe in God and all of that. Look, this Christianity was created in the first century of this era after Augustus Caesar died. He was a cult icon, pretty much the same as Jim Jones or Donald Trump, you know, any of that, Adolf Hitler. They were cult, then people, they had a cult following. And after he passed away in 12 or 13 AD, then his followers proclaimed him to have been the Messiah, without having any understanding of what the term Messiah meant. And it was simply a term that was a title for the sun as it moved from one constellation on the first day of spring to a new constellation. A new era was born. And this child, that Mesu means the child, the child. And that's what the son was called, being born into a new era, a new house. This is what it originally meant. And they, Europeans, the Romans and Greeks, could not understand the concept of eunosticism and the adoration Africans showed for nature. And so they decided, well, we got our own Messiah right here, you know, with Augustus. And that idea was kicked around, and they tried to convert African writings, which mostly were from Egypt at that time, they just altered them, changed them to make it a historical account, even though they had no evidence, no, there's nothing to support it. It didn't matter. because they had power. As long as they controlled the government and the army, the legions of the Roman army, then they could say Christianity and the Old Testament, they were the law. Anybody who practiced any other religion was an outlaw and could be punished, and the punishment could be death. This is how it came into being. The people, the Gnostics, the people of color who believed in nature, their genocide was committed against them. They were destroyed, murdered, their writings wiped out, and then buried. The only thing that survived was the many of the glyphs buried in the coffins in Egypt under the, after the. And they didn't even find those till the later years, but they preserved the hieroglyphs because they were buried in the coffins and nobody knew where those coffins were. This was 1700 years ago. Then comes the German Constantine. He marches into with an army into Rome and takes over Rome, conquers it. And then he issued an edict. I believe the year was he conquered Rome in 312 AD, and then the next year he issued his edict that only Christianity would be the accepted religion in the Roman Empire, that all other religions were outlawed. And that's how Christianity came into being. It's a ridiculous story. It is. It's a cartoon story almost. Originally, this was the beliefs of the Gnostic, the black, brown people of that area way back then, who believed in nature, who were using the titles as nature. And then they converted it into a history, claiming this guy had actually lived and walked the land and his mom was a virgin, all of this stuff. We all know it because we all grew up with it. But all of it is bogus. And so many of our people are still caught up into that, not only here, but in the Africa as well, especially along the coastal communities where all these European colonizers lived as they exported our minerals and our people. So anyway, that's setting the stage for what I'm saying is in this diaspora, that we're never going to reach equality. It's not going to happen because we've been trying. We've done everything. How many of black lives must be lost before we realize that this dude is not going to change? In 2020, I think 73,000, a million people voted for Donald Trump. And in last year, 77 million voted for Donald Trump. Come on. I mean, many of the people who voted for black, us, many Latinos voted for him. Are you kidding me? This is a cult. How many black people went with Jim Jones down to Georgetown, Guyana? Huh? Most of them were black people. We got to understand, look, this guy that's in there now is nothing but a cult icon. And he loves white supremacy. That's his mode. That's who he is. He's a white supremacist, period. You can kick it around and analyze it from all kinds of angles, which everybody is doing, it seems like. But the bottom line is he's a white supremacist. And that means that we never are going to receive, when you consider that 77 million people voted for him, look, they're not going to give it up. They're not going to change. And what we need to do is go back to Africa. That's where we belong. We didn't immigrate here like everybody else. We were brought here in chains, enslaved. And come on, we all know the story. It's time to go back. Instead of asking them for reparations, everybody thinking they're going to get some little check in their pocket, some thousands of dollars or 40 acres and a mule, all the so-called promises and about this and that. They ain't gonna give up nothing. Nothing. They right now increased the budget for immigration by threefold. Think about 300% more. That means they're gonna have all these thugs running around the streets, deporting these anybody that looks like they don't belong here, in their opinion, and sending them to detention centers and sending them who knows where. And when they finish with them, they come in for us. Trust me, they come in for us because that's who they are. They see equality as a threat to their domination. And if all things are equal, then they automatically inferior because they don't have melanin. And they're not willing to miscegenate and produce children of color because they like the idea of being able to dominate and control simply because they're white. You both go into a school, chances are the school government, which is controlled by white people, is going to favor the white student. And that goes across the board, whether it's jobs, whether it's housing. Don't let me just go on down the list. But all of this stuff has been happening to us for 500 years. Why in the world would we want to continue living here with that? Yeah, I know every now and then somebody's successful, got a great job, owns two or three cars. You look at some of them athletes of our, But hey, we got to think not, this is individual achievements. We got to think as a group, our brothers and sisters, that system, that extended family system is what is inherent in us as Black people. You know, I go all over the world sometimes, or have been, nowadays I don't, but almost everywhere I go, even in China, I run in Black when we speak. In all throughout Asia, we just speak simply because we're Black. You know, we understand this struggle that we've been in. You know, white people don't do that, but we do. Hey, brother, what up? You know, what you doing over here? You know, and you know, that's just the way we are. So my argument, and I know that it's going to take a lot of effort to get started, is to begin to tell our people, look, it's time to go home. We are victims of kidnap. And if anybody breaks your house and takes one of your kids, the first thing and only thing that you want is to get your child back safe. And this is the attitude across much of Africa, even if they don't have the systems in place to guarantee that's what's going to happen and that it's going to go smoothly. At least we wouldn't have to put up with the biggest threat to us here, which is racism and white supremacy. So I'm saying, look, man, you might be comfortable, maybe, but we got to think about the future, about our grand, great grands, and on and on. We are one people, and we've got to not be selfish about what our objectives are, and to do for all, do for one, do for all. And not be individual. That's the European style. That's not our style. We got to think, look, every now and then you hear about somebody that moved back to Africa and got an apartment, opened a business, whatever. But we got to think as a unit of a group of people that we all should be able to go home. And it might take a while to reculturate ourselves and to, you know, undermine the political systems that are left by Europe that are still need to be dismantled. But Africa is our home. People treat you fairly there. Honestly, they treat you like a brother or a sister. They do. I'm serious. I've been there. I lived in Ghana. I lived in Mali. I lived in Senegal. And I traveled all to many other countries there. So I know that despite the difficulties, that it can be done. It must be begun, and we're the ones to do it because we're the people who are speaking out about it. And we have to find a way to entice our youngsters into forming this kind of organization that will start communing with another organization in Africa, and with the objective of bringing our people home, of going back, so that not for you, maybe you might suffer if you make that move, you might lose this or that, but you're talking about in the long run, what is best for our people, your children, our children, your grandchildren, for me it's great grandkids now, so, you know, and beyond. And that's what we've got to do. So that's my whole, not the whole, but basic argument for, rather than be going around here organizing, as some people are doing, trying to get reparation, the reparations that we should demand is that they pay us for repatriation. You took us from there. We built this madness you got here, and now we want to go home. And you should pay us for that. That's my feeling about it. So give me y'all. Okay.
Hey, Jerry, I got the first question this evening. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to you for years and years, and mm-hmm. you're really straightforward with your assessments and your studies, and you're straightforward to the point. Now, mm-hmm. because of colonization, and the effects of it on Black people mentally, what is the single most thing that you think is the greatest challenge for us?
Boy, that's a tough one. I want to say Christianity to somehow make our people understand what our religion was before this was imposed on us. But that's being too simplistic, I think, and because even in Africa, as I when I went there, many of the families that became near and dear to me were Christian, and they were struggling between the Christianity on the one hand and their own native religions or practices on the other hand. It was always a struggle. And their form of Christianity was different because of that, you know, because they believed in the continuity after death and emphatically believed it. And it was hard to them to mix that with this fake narratives about Jesus and all of that stuff. So that's a big, big, big detriment for us, especially when you got these white supremacists who are also Christians, or they claim to be. In fact, they're the ones who introduced it. They wrote the whole thing, you know? Come on. Who did they create? Jehovah, in their own vision of him as a white man ruling everything, the universe. Come on. I mean, it's so stupid when you think about it. And I don't mean to insult people, but you know, it really is. It's like, man, I don't even know what to compare it to. It's like someone asking you to believe in Superman, that he actually existed, you know, Captain America, whatever you want to call it.
Now, I have an observation. Because of the fascination of superheroism, and you know, the amazing stories and this and that, I think people mm-hmm. are really intrigued by that type of mystique. And then because of the childlike manner that we have as individuals, we want to believe in something that's impossible. I think mm-hmm. that may have a little bit to do with it. We have this intrigue yeah. about superheroism. You know, so that's just a little observation. I'm going to go to the panel. Thanks a lot for answering that.
Okay.
Let's start off with Sister Linda. Sister Linda, can you unmute?
Yes, I can, but I don't have any questions right now.
No
because
questions?
I'm just, no okay. questions right now. I'm just listening and learning.
Okay, that's good. Okay, Brother
Before you
Yashenda.
go on, Rashikani, let me say this just quickly.
Okay.
We here in the diaspora, we Christians, we grew up under a system we had no control over. They didn't teach us nothing about Africa, except unless you went to a Tarzan movie. And even then, what you learn, you know. So really, the ignorance we had about who we were as a people was totally smothered. So really, we shouldn't be shocked or surprised at the depths that Black people here in the diaspora embrace Christianity, because they don't know anything else. We haven't had control over their education. And only we're in this group tonight because we have taken it upon ourselves to go out and educate ourselves. And so we know the truth. And now we're struggling with how to spread this word to all the masses of our people. And one of the big steps in that is to make them understand, number one, the racism that we encounter here, which covers every aspect of our lives, is something that is not going to disappear because these white people don't want to give up their position of control. And the same way in Africa, when we go there, we've got to make sure we re-educate our people. Just it's an exchange of what we have studied and what they have learned over there, and they can teach us how we treat each other, how we're family, how we, you know, the head, the chief is never corruptible or never an icon figure as you see amongst these white people, simply because they view the village as their family, their extended family, their own children and grandchildren. So that's the difference in the systems. Whereas in the Americas, it's always the individual. That's why you have so many heroes. That's why they name their streets and towns after some dead white person, usually white, sometimes Black. But they name them after some hero. You understand? Hero worship is common here in amongst Europeans because of the kind of development, the place that they, when Europe was frozen for decades, how they developed and based on physical strength, prowess, you know, hunting abilities, and all of that, and these strong people became the heroes in the community, and that has been retained all the way up till today. You see? So they worship their heroes. And that's how these iconic figures keep rising up every few years or so. Okay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to inject that. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Brother Mashenda.
No, I don't have any questions. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Not only observation, but a reality. So it's like the magic question is, how do we get people to, you know, to understand what's happening and, you know, follow suit. You know, there are people who are, you know, taking note, is moving out and doing their things. But, you know, my question to the brother, so what do you think would take to get like a mass movement to bail out of here?
I'm telling you, you're asking probably the wrong person because I don't know. And I don't think anybody knows. All I know is we've got to start, this has got to become a part of our conversation. And until now, our conversations have been, you know, how to get a good job and move out of the ghetto and all of this stuff, stay out of jail and all of that, just surviving under this system where we have no control over how it's run and the laws that it makes, you know, which ensure that it retains control over everything and everybody. So, if we could and did mount such a thing as a civil rights movement, I don't think even that could have happened without the blessings of white people who maybe felt a guilt complex or whatever and felt enough in power to where they could, okay, let's give them some equality and then give it to us, you see? But I'm saying that ultimately our objective has got to be to go home. We cannot separate the who we are today from who we were 500 years ago when they broke into our villages and started kidnapping and chaining and bringing us here. We can't separate. We've got to recognize that we're one people. We are extensions of ourselves. That's how we came to be, you know? So we've got to just make the effort. If it's an individual, do it within your family. And hopefully people will start more and more organizing. Like I say, a big help is from some of the African countries themselves, who are also recognizing that the same devil that brought us here is the same one who colonized and suppressed them. And so it's a question, well, we go there, we have to relearn to be African and take what we was beneficial and to help Africa develop, redevelop itself and fit into the modern world. So I don't know what the intricacies are about developing. I just know first, number one, we got to do what we're doing right now. Talk about it. Kick it around. Throw it to your family. I know they're going to resist. Probably 90%. But we got to look up ways to develop this as an idea rather than keep fighting this impossible war, trying to get equality. It's never going to happen. These people today, this same guy who's 77 million people voted for, is facilitating genocide right there in Gaza. I mean, he's sending them whatever they need. Think about that for a second. This is the place we live. Why should we stay here with this? For what? What is our objective? There is no objective. We can never expect to gain equality here. How? We've been trying for 500 years. It may never happen. It's never going to happen. But right there across that water is our own home place that we were stolen from. Why should we not go back there? Yeah, it might be a struggle at first. But hey, as long as we're staying here, we are constantly struggling. Like it or not, no matter how successful some one of two of us are, well, the rest of us are struggling. It's time to take our struggle, our efforts back to our home, our natural homes. And then, you know, we just got to think like that. So I don't know what it takes. To how to organize that. But I just know it needs to be talked about. I don't want to hear brothers, young men talking about getting this job and getting my degree and then I'll become this or that and working for this corporation. Yeah, come on, man. Go home. Go home. Because you can do all of that here. But you're always going to face racism. No matter what you do, you're going to face it because they're in control. They make the laws. They control the police. They control the army. Yeah, come on. Why should we continue with this impossible struggle when Africa needs us? We need it. We need to go home. So how you instill that and get people to start talking about it, that's just the challenge for each one of us, to go out and make sure that someone who has me, I'm too old, but someone who has the energy can say, okay, what I'm going to do is write to this university in Accra and see if there's any student union or political union that we can start communicating with the idea of repatriation. It's a beginning, one step, one tiny step, but it's a beginning. And that's why I say, please listen to the system, the Arikana Chihimori, because she's saying the same thing. And she's brilliant when she says it. Her words are much more informed. She's much more informed about the situation in Africa and the exploitation by these Europeans than anyone I've ever heard, really, when I think about it. He's right there. So I recommend you all look at that. And then, you know, Mashenda, I don't mean to put you off, but I'm saying I don't know. I'm not the kind of person who organizes anything. You know, just keeping myself organized is enough for me. But I really recognize, having gone out in the world and been in all these countries, both in Asia and Africa, is that number one, the racism is minimal, if at all. And that's the biggest problem here in America by far. And so right then, when you shut that off, that burden off, it gives you, you'd be surprised how freedom can give you a whole lot of ideas about how to develop.
Okay, Jerry, there's a, I want to get to some of the other people, but there's a, what is it? Foundational Black People, or it's an FBA, or you heard of that?
I haven't. Look, you got to keep in mind one thing. When I'm down there in Cuba, we don't hardly get all the information about what's going on in the U.S. because
okay,
the U.S.
so,
has imposed
so
these blockades. You know?
There's a claim, Jerry, that Black people was here before these white folks.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I agree with that without any doubt.
So,
that's
so
quite
then,
obvious.
What about those people who claim that, and then they said, this is our land, and they don't want to leave? They said, we supposed to be here.
Well, they can be here. But I'm saying, look, if we go back far enough in time, we all come up out of Africa. I'm not saying go back that far, but we did. And we know that from the practices, that especially the language, more than anything else, probably, that we all began the same, and that most of the nature worship that you find about people of color all around the world can be traced back to a simple origin in Africa. So, you know, definitely Black people had already come here to Africa, no doubt about that. But they had gone around the world. Even Europe was popularized and peopled by Africans. But as we know, they had that catastrophe in 1500 BC, a meteor shower, which I think threw up a cloud which of dust and debris to the extent to where it blocked out the sunlight for decades. So that it was constant winter there. And, you know, I don't want to get into that story. And then they were forced to inbreed to survive. And the inbreeding in turn led to the loss of melanin. So, you know, they can argue and say that's not the case, but I never heard none of them stand up and say that because they know it's true. You know, they did research on it, you know, and they know that that's the fact. And on top of that, the way they develop with that hero mentality, that strongman mentality, and you know, putting everything down, even their own women didn't have any kind of say so in the family unit. You know, they were literally slaves, were there to make children, male children, hopefully. But anyway, that's another story. But I'm saying that we're living under their control. in this diaspora. Some of us may be successful, but hey, it's only what? what hundredth of 1% that make it? And we cannot think as individuals. Oh yeah, that dude, he did all right, man. He got six homes and all of this. We got to start remembering that we are one people, you know, and that we come from a system where my brother is my brother and my sister is a sister. And that's how we treat each other. And that is still the fact in Africa, you know, at least that was my experience. You know, they treat you as a brother, and there is no racism. And that is just, man, I can't tell you the burden that is lifted with but that simple fact alone. You don't even realize, I didn't realize when I left this country the first time, I was 18. And I had no idea until I got to Japan, and suddenly people treated me as a human being and not as a black person. You understand me? But just as who I am. They judge me for whatever I brought to the table, you know? And my color had nothing to do with it. And then is when I realized that, wow, man, the whole world was like that outside of the U.S. and European countries, you know? Oh, my goodness. It was such a liberating thing. And then finally, when I end up going and living in Africa and understanding that the system was the extended family, if you wanted something done, you know, you asked your brother or your sister in the family that you had been adopted into, at least I was, and they said, well, I don't know, but let me ask my cousin, and doo-doo-doo, it would get done because that's how they're organized. So, you know, we shouldn't be afraid to make that move, even if it could be stressful and, you know, everybody is not going to be successful in the beginning. But ultimately, successful or not, we belong in Africa. We don't belong here. And anybody that thinks they belong here and wants to stay here, well, stay. But we need to take our people home. And that's the fact.
Hey, Jerry, I think that's Mashariki. Is that you? You got to unmute. Okay, I think that's you, Mashariki. When you're able to unmute, we'll come to you. And who's that you have with you? Dang, I wish you could unmute. Okay, let me go to, did she unmute?
Can you hear me?
Hey, Mashariki, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? I'm in the car, and I have a guest person with me, and I was listening. Great to hear Jerry, but
hey,
I can't. And yeah, I'm with you on that. It's that time to go back. And,
yeah.
You know, it's not the easiest task because I look at myself, you know, I know some people have a whole tribe to go with them, family and everything, it's me. So
right.
That's a great thing to do. If the doorway opened up and said, here it is, easy, let's go, I'm out. But mm-hmm. If I got to put it together by myself, that's a struggle.
All right, well, go. That's why I say, if the door opens, just go. You will not
mm-hmm.
be disappointed. Trust me
oh,
on
I'm
that.
Sure. I'm
and,
sure.
And, I'm not saying everything will go smoothly or easily, but the if you stay here, nothing's going to go smoothly or easily.
Mm-mm. Now so, I know some people that
and,
have
and
reloaded.
And plus, you still got the whole idea of racism staring you all the time. Whereas
all
there,
time.
You don't have that. You see?
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
So I have a friend in Tanzania. She's opened up
uh-huh.
a business. I know people in Ghana. So, you know, people are making the moves to get out of here.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying we got to go with the idea that we're children that been away, been kidnapped, and we have to
mm-hmm.
relearn the culture and you know, not try to act like because we may or may not have a little bit more that we deserve this or that. You know, we got to go there humble, humble to learn to be African again. And you whether that'll happen, I don't know. I wish I had another
Oh, and let me just
whatever.
add one other extra thing because I know people that would love to go, but their health is so bad they can't. They can't take a chance and go in some place where they're dealing with health care that doesn't have them, whatever their illnesses may be, able to continue on getting whatever treatments or whatever that they're doing currently. So that
Well,
makes
that's
it.
why I'm saying, excuse me, not to cut you off. This is why I'm saying we have to organize. We have to form organizations here and then form organizations in Africa with African people who under who the objective is to bring the people, bring us home and to teach us and make it as smooth a transition as possible. It's to help each other. Come on.
So I
We've
have
been victimized for how long?
that's true. I have a
Time to go
question for
home.
you, Jerry. Are you quietly organizing a group that's going to Africa anytime soon?
I'm in Cuba. I tell people all the time down there, but at my age, I can't. I'm not as mobile as I used to be.
Okay, I feel you.
I
I
don't
feel
get
you.
around. So
I feel you.
I'm putting a lot of energy into my son, trying to teach him, and luckily he's inquisitive enough to want to know certain things. So, you
Which
know, that's
son?
my Christian.
Dave? Christian?
Yeah,
Chris.
in
Okay.
Cuba. Yeah.
Okay. This is a new son.
Well, that's another story. We ain't got time to talk about that right now.
Okay, I'll talk to you offline on that one. Okay, thank you.
All
All
right.
right.
Thanks, Masariki, for coming. All right. Brother Hendrick is, well, I'll go to Brother Hendrick. I'm going to come to you next, Ernest, and then DX. Brother Hendrick?
Yes, sir.
How you doing? Welcome, welcome.
I've been cut off. My computer cut off a couple of times, so I didn't get all the gist. But from the last few comments that I heard, you know, in terms of what we need to do, you know, the example is already in our history here in America. The closest thing is the Garvey movement, talking about going back home. That's what that whole thing was about. And also what's going on now with some of the rising up in Burkina Faso and Chad and other countries, I'm sure we can exchange. Well, first of all, you know, the cultural thing got us in America. As long as we stay with this American and European culture, which is where it comes from, celebrating all these holidays and all of that stuff, the belief system and all that, you know, we got to clear out what's between our ears first. And then, you know, make that connection back home and you know, get some things situated. We got a bunch of people here that have certain skills that can revolutionize some African cities overnight, like mechanics, electricians, and all of that kind of stuff. You know, they're here at the barber shops and the donut stands and whatnot. And you know, they could be of service. From what I hear, is a lot of vehicles just on the side of the road that these neighborhood mechanics can go there and get stuff running. But anyway, like I said, the example's already been set. The closest thing we have in America is Garvey movement, and it needs to be investigated thoroughly and go from there. That's all.
All right, appreciate it, Hembry. You want to respond, Jerry?
No, I agree with you 1,000%. And it's one step at a time. It's the people who are asking us, and the governments in Africa asking us to come back, understand that it's not a simple transition. You know, it's not just jump on the plane, here you are. You know, you got to go through a learning process and a cultural learning process, in some cases, a linguistic learning process, and on and on. But we got to start. That's my point, is to simply say, look, if we could organize a church picnic or a car wash, then we could start thinking of organizing this movement back to Africa instead of constantly going to this white man asking for equality, which he never going to give. So we need to start going back to our own people and asking them to help us come home. And they are, and many of those countries are willing to help you to do it. But it's just a matter of organizing. And that's why I say you, one of the persons that we should tune into is the Arikana Chihumbori, whom I mentioned in the beginning. And you should listen to her because she was the ambassador from the African Union to the United States. And she's very well versed in what has happened in Africa, what's going on there, about what's available there and how they need the expertise of many people trained here in the diaspora to take that the expertise there to help Africa develop. So, yeah, it's just, I wish I was, you know, 30 years younger or whatever. I would certainly give every effort toward building such organization and communicating with other organizations that may already exist in Africa or could be built there in Africa to help. We work it from both ends, you know, and the objective has got to be to go, because why are we staying here? I mean, really think about that sometime. Give it serious personal thought. What is your objective in staying here? What is your ideal for your grandchildren and your children and their children? What do you want for them? Do you want them to keep fighting the same racial struggle that we've been fighting for 500 years? Continue that? When you can see that as these white people are pushed into the corner, they act just like a cornered rat. They're attacking any people of color. That whatever problems they have, these white people who are too lazy to work their own farms and instead bring in slaves to work it for them, you know, or build their own cities, bringing in slaves to build it for them. And these are people who are now being pushed into a corner to where they don't have the expertise. And so what they want to do is blame it on people of color. Yes, the immigrants. Well, immigrants means who? People coming up from Latin America, from China, from the Caribbean, you know? This is what they're blaming. And they're trying to, you know, look for a scapegoat to blame it all on instead of on themselves, you know? The Chinese are just more intelligent, more, they don't go for profits only. If that means that in order to keep their people employed, that they have to lose money in that business for so many years until they recover, then that's what they do. But in America, if they don't make a profit, shoot, you out the door the next day. Sorry, man, we don't be needing you. After Friday, we ain't gonna be needing you no more. Yeah, seriously. One of the big thing, this may not have nothing to do with it, just off the hand, but one of the big reasons that China developed to be the leading economy in the world today is because these American companies went to China because they went there to build factories because they can get cheap labor and at the same time have access to that 1.5 billion people market. That's why they went there. That's why you see Detroit and all those Midwestern industrial cities, Pittsburgh and all of them, U.S. Steel, which is bought by Japan now. All of them went over there to save money. The bottom line was how much money they can make. That's capitalism. And that's why the difference in capitalism is they have to make a profit. If they don't make a profit, they're going to fire you. Whereas in the Chinese way of developing, is, look, you sacrifice for the welfare of your people. You make sure your people are fed, that they have a place to stay. There's no homeless. You know, even if you lose money for a few years and until you recover. And that's their mentality. And it's their idea. And you can see what it's done. It's worked. In 1970, China was the poorest country on this earth. Can you imagine that? 50 years later, they're the leading economy on this earth. 50 years. So look, China's in Africa, telling them we'll help you develop. But the expertise to do that has to come from we in the diaspora. And we need to go, because Africa's waking up and Africa has everything. They have everything. They don't need to import nothing. Trust me, it's all there. It's never been developed, because all the development was taken by the Europeans to their country. Okay, that's another thing.
Okay, let's go to Ernest. Ernest McBride?
Well, right, Pastor Keith, can you put the information on that sister back up there? I was trying to write it down.
Let me spell it out for you again. Her name is Arikana Chimbori. She is the former African Union ambassador to the United States. She talks about USA like it's a gift that they ended it. that's another story. But anyway, her spelling is, her first name, Arikana, A-R-I-K-A-N-A, Arikana. Last name, Chihumbori, C-H-I-H-O-M-B-O-R-I. You can probably find her on YouTube or, you know.
I've got her up right now, Jerry.
Okay, she's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant woman, and very, very insightful into what has happened in Africa and how we need to develop Africa. We don't need these Europeans in there sucking all the blood and wealth out. Man, especially France. Oh my goodness. But anyway, that's another story. So.
Okay. Thanks. Ernest?
That kind of perked me up when you said about France. My daughter and them been over there for about 5 years now. She's trying to get me to move over there. You know,
so in France,
yeah, she's in Grenoble, France. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And she loves it. Say it's totally different, you know, over there here. So I said, well, I told her the thing about me. I just kind of listen to a lot of stuff that he said. I've been aware of, you know, over the years, especially about religions, because my mother was really religious and Baptist. Mm. We went to Sunday school and church and all that. And my dad, kind of, as we got older, he just kind of said, hey, religion is good for one thing, makes dying easier. And that's kind of what he looked at it. And then I had always thought, well, you got, Confucius and Muhammad and all these just a lot older than Christianity. So how can we say ours is the right one and theirs is not? You know, so that has always confused me all my life. So I just told my dad, well, one thing you want to at least try to accept one. So when you do die, if this stuff is true, will you come back and all that? You know, you go to heaven, and so to speak, you at least should be on the right side. You know, no. So to me, you know, I've just what he says is a lot of truth in that, and because I've seen over the years, you know, kind of dealing with. I don't think we'll ever get rid of this racism here either. So. But like I told my daughter, hey, I'm too old to move over there to start anew. So I just have to ride it out to the end, you know.
Yeah. Right.
So that's kind of
Well, that's very insightful. All of us have been victimized by that Christian narrative. Trust me. And especially when we backed on slavery, when that was the only kind of respite we got, being able to have our Sunday meetings, you know? So, and then, you know, our own religion, the languages, names, everything was taken away, you know, upon arrival was taken away. So, you know, we never developed as Africans, you know. So these are the things we need. We in this group, we understand what our history, what has happened to us. But we just have to change the idea of thinking that this devil is ever going to relinquish his power over us. He's never going to do it. He'd rather die first, trust me. And that's their mentality. You know, they like being supreme, white supremacist. They like it. And because of that, they refuse to mix in and make sure that their offspring are people of color. They don't do that. And they're not going to do it. And they'd rather go to war. I mean, come on. We need to get our people to start moving, because as long as we stay here, we're going to be their victim. And we black people are the ultimate victim, because we black, period. You know, that's more of a danger to them than the Chinese or the Orientals or the Latinos. And, you know, they see black as the ultimate opposite of white, which it is. And we need to start protecting our children and the people that come after us. And the one of the ways to do that, the best way, I think, is to start them thinking, look, I'm here as a victim. I'm not here because I want to be. I'm here because I was kidnapped from my home. I want to know what my home is, where I come from, you know, who I am. And we should all want that. And we got to start telling each other that's what we really want, without acknowledging, without knowing it. You know, obviously knowing, literally, that's what we want. And if you think we can get equality, it ain't gonna happen. Sorry, it ain't gonna happen. You know, you can get PhD and this, who was it, Malcolm or Milan, or one of them said, you have all the degrees you want in the world, but in the end, to them, you just another nigga. And that's how they think.
All right. Brother DX.
Greetings, greetings. Namaste, everyone. I am so honored to be in the presence of these scholars, Jerry and everyone, the sister, the ambassador, as well as you, Ross, and of course, you know, the regulars. I'm honored. I'm the one that's probably going to give you the most feedback, Jerry, just for the simple fact that I'm a Black Wall Street baby, and you know, my descendants are Choctaw and Comanche. And most of the lies that they've been told, they've been telling us, we're in a new age, and I can kind of tell, no offense, no offense at all. I respect you. I love you as an elder, but that's an old guard. Like what that mentality of going back to Africa is an old guard. We're not on that guard anymore. And we're not using that mentality. That guard has dissipated, because we are the descendants of the beings that were here well before, during the Great Deluge, when the continent separated. We all over the planet. We everywhere on the planet as indigenous beings, everywhere we are. When Christopher Columbus resident went to South America, it was us, the Olmecs are us. When they came up north, up here, to try to figure out, you know, what colony or how to do what, those 13 colonies came from us. We gave them the 13 colonies. These slave plantations were our homes. We built these before they got here. A lot of these prisons and things were castles of ours. There's a whole history that's been hidden. The Grand Canyon has Egyptian monuments and pyramids in it. There's some things going on that has been revealed that is no longer a reality for many of us. So there's no need to promote going to Africa when the ultimate goal is like, even with the movement of the 70s, you know, I'm Malcolm X. Like, we didn't have no business going, sitting in the diners, getting our heads beat in the first place. And then we had a whole guard that told us to go out and vote. So yeah, he got 77,000 million votes or something, because for the whole meantime, the Black Caucus hasn't done anything to make any rules or laws. Why? Because they devils too. The kinfolk ain't skin folk. Like, we have up against the whole COINTELPRO, a while the Khalid Muhammad's and Dr. Delbert Blair's and the Dr. Sabies and some of the others that were very dominant and prominent in their craft and what they were doing, they didn't get the mainstream. Why? Because we looking at the Oprah. You're following a Camilla or some of these other people. We got people right around us right now that are revolutionary. The energy is here. You in the old guard, this new guard, we ain't hearing that. The people who's afraid to shoot back, you're afraid to fight back, afraid to pick up a gun and bust them upside the head. Because we supposed to be passive and free? That's because we keep turning the other cheek. That's because we the ones that been hung from a tree. That's because we the ones that's here right now with the eyes of fire, skin of burnt bronze, and the hair like sheep's wool. There's no greater people on the planet, no matter where we at. And we ain't running, we fighting. That's what we doing. We want our land back, and the rest of them can go back. They the immigrants. They the ones that come from Ireland and Iceland and Germany and France and all these other places. They came over here in the 1800s and late 1600s. We was already here. With civilizations, with cities. We didn't build Tulsa in a generation. That city was already built. All that oil belonged to us. All the OPEC, all that come from us. And we know this. Why would we leave the best country in the whole wide world that we built at our worst? At our worst, we built the best country at our worst. And we going to leave this, all of this? No way. Everybody come over here to get something from us. They want to come to our schools. We are the land of milk and honey. We are the new world. We are the light and the beacon in the mountain on the hill with the worst, because we cut the lights on. There's a Garrett Morgan. There's all of the music come from us. All of the, even the history. When you talk about people in canoes, right? You talk about Africa, you talk about that right here. When you talk about people with a circle, with drums, like, we still playing our drums in a circle. We still got our ciphers that we build and our bonfires. You want to talk about people with bows and arrows? We have bows and arrows right here too. Same way. You want to talk about people painting their faces? We painted our faces too. You want to talk about people speaking another language? Well, when you get in the church and you start off, go out there, they'll swear it's the Holy Spirit when ain't nothing but an ancestor coming through telling you who you are, what you do. But when they did it with the voodoo and they dance and come up and dance and do that, where was that? In New Orleans? That wasn't in Africa. That was in New Orleans right here. We the spiritual ones. We're the ones that read the cards. We're the ones that do the chants. We the ones that turn water into wine. We do all of that. We are the mystic world, the top of the pyramid over here. Ain't no reason to go back to Africa. Ain't nobody getting a check from Africa. If Africa really wanted us, they would have been sending us checks over here. There'd been people come over here training us in our army, getting us up a military over here so we could take back our land. That's what we need to be doing. If we want to partner with Africa, bring Africa over here and tell Africa, train us. Like, they got military and all this stuff, but we can have our own, because there's some folks over here that's scared. We don't care. We should have been and took out these police when they was taking us out. I guarantee you it wouldn't be another man on the street dead or hanging. Even today in 2025. Because we scared. When we stop being scared, and we ain't afraid to die, but we're afraid to kill. Who said that? That was your girl, let me get the quote on her. The one that defecated on the stage. Nina Simone. She said it best. Say, our people, they ready to die, but they're afraid to kill. You'll die for a revolution and for liberation, but you won't kill for your liberation. And if you want to do something, we all need to pick up a gun and do something about it. If they want to fight with that, then that's what we fight with. They ain't going to do nothing to us. They know who we are. They done did it all already. What's left? I yield the floor.
Mwah. Brother, you need to go home. You might call America home, but you don't run it. You don't control it. You don't have no say in how it's done. None, whatever. That means you're a victim here. Period. Why would you be afraid? You think that the native people here, who you claim to be, you know, all of us are.
Not a claim.
That don't mean nothing. Listen, let me finish my sentence.
I know, I'll let but you don't. Finish.
Let me finish my sentence because I let you go on and on.
I didn't care to assassinate you, though.
I let you go on and on. Look.
Right. Don't care to assassinate me, though.
The native people in this country were Africans, whether they was called red men or whatever. Everybody in the whole world evolved out of Africa. So what are you talking about? We're talking about a country that is controlled by white supremacists, period. We ain't talking about nothing else. I didn't say take your butt to France. I didn't say go to Germany or Austria or Italy. I said go to Africa, where our people are, where they're in charge, where they have a connection to the land since humans ever existed. That's where we came from, all of us, even the Europeans.
Mm.
You're not talking Jerry, about the connection to the land. What it's one earth. The yeah. land is the land. But we
That's
all
what I'm
live
saying. My people
in
buried
Africa.
Here. My grandparents
you
know, and great grandparents.
Let me
here.
Tell you something. Let me tell you something. My mother's aunt, excuse me, my grandmother's aunt was a native, so-called Native American. Hiawatha, her name was, for that matter. That don't
that
mean nothing
right
to me.
There.
It don't mean nothing to me. No, it doesn't tell me anything. It tells me that the people, let me finish, please. Let me finish, please. The people who inhabited first this continent called America came from Africa. So what are you saying?
They didn't come from Africa.
You saying that they didn't come from Africa? Are you saying that
they
were born here and not? That they were developed here on this continent and did not come from Africa? Is that
no, they
your point?
Not. They came from we came from South America first. Through Asia.
Oh my God.
They came through South America and
brother,
came up
brother,
that way.
I'm sorry. Me and you ain't
the
never gonna agree.
Came
I can
across
see that right now. Because you can tell simply not only from the religious factor, the fact that we all worship nature in some form or another, but also from the linguistics. Even let me tell you something. You mentioned the word canoe in your presentation. You know where the word canoe comes from? You don't know. I know you don't know because you ain't read my books. But I'll tell you this right now. It came out of Egypt. Canoe means to go to Ken. Ken was the center of the equator. That's where Kenya, Ganda, that's what they're named after. Canoe means to row upstream. And they had a picture of a boat with a paddle being rowed upstream because the Nile flows from the equator to the Mediterranean, to the north.
We got the Mississippi.
To paddle upriver means to canoe. That's where the word came from. And that was the word that the Spaniards, Columbus and them, found in the Americas, representing these ways of getting around by the natives. Eh?
You just
so,
really proved my point there.
I mean, look, that's just one example, and I ain't got time to go through all my notes and break out all the many, 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 many more, let alone the religious practices and the belief in nature in every form. But you were talking about staying here? Are you kidding me? For what?
Because our grandparents
and
great-grandparents.
We've been here for 500 years, and as you say, you've been here even longer. So where are you today? What are you?
Right
are
where
you
we belong.
Safe Are you safe? Can
Yes,
you
sir.
be approached by the police at any time just because you're black?
Doesn't matter. I have my
I mean,
own.
It does matter.
In
it
regard.
Does matter because we're living under white supremacists, and you better get it in your mind. Are you,
you
so sick about all the people that the so-called native people that you're talking about? They murdered more than 50 million of them in less than 100 years. That's genocide every year for 100 years. Do you understand? Do you know the history?
They ain't been killing nobody but us for the last 500 years, bro. They weren't killing
exactly.
Listen, brother DX, we're going to have to move on.
I know, I ain't going to get him. He too deep. I'm just messing my point.
We just going to have to move on. You were able to express yourself, and he just, you know, he rebutted. And that's, you know, it's over with. We'll move on. Professor Rob, we're going to end with you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Appreciate what's been said and discussed, if I understand correctly. And I want to say a sante to my brother, my friend, my colleague. We built a lot of arguments. We built the Black World Institute together. We went to demonstrations and we battlefield tested Brother Assad Jabal. We confronted the Klan and we confronted police of misconduct going all the way back in the 70s. And I started in 65. But the point is that Jerry has lived in Africa, Japan, China, and Cuba. But I just want to say this, that, you know, we as a people have to understand that all the white people didn't just come here. Just a few came, and they began to develop incentives to get others to come once they set up their system. You're not going to get a mass, I don't think there's going to be a mass movement of African Americans, but you can find some that want to go and want to try to set up a lifestyle understanding of using Africa as a place for some Black people who want to go to get away from this oppression. Some people don't even know they're oppressed. They're comfortable with their oppression. You understand? I mean, the only thing when they at a funeral, the only thing they're really happy is that it ain't them. You understand? And so the other thing is, you know, people think that you can go. We've had Back to Africa movements all since our struggle to emancipate ourselves. Paul Coffey, he took about 28 or some Africans, former enslaved Africans, back to Africa. You had the colonial company take some. That's how Sierra Leone got started. That's how Liberia got started. These were African Americans that resettled in Africa. Africans that were in America that resettled. But they came in small groups and they built and they built. Brought others over that wanted to come. And they, you know, you'd be surprised at the African countries that have been colonized and acculturated into European countries. You go to Africa, you see white Jesus is all over the place. You see white Muslims all over the place. And you'd be thinking that you're going, see, there's a lot of Africans that still live in their aboriginal state, but many of them live in the cities. And most of them cities are emulate white folks. Even the president from South Africa, brother, when he came to meet with Trump, he had a suit on him. He didn't have an African. And he didn't even... I mean, he did a good job rebutting him talking about Africans creating genocide. You'd be surprised that the most African-centered people in the world are right here in the United States. Many, all you have to do is see that most of the schools that many Africans go to on the continent are British schools, French schools, and then you'd be surprised at the number of countries that English is their number one language as far as dealing with commerce and communication. You know. Now, the struggle is another. You have to run into problems. First of all, you're going to, some people want to go different ways. But, like, can you get dual citizenship? No. In some African countries, you can. The continent of Africa is 12 million square miles. The reason why we call ourselves African, because we don't know what part of Africa we came from. They tried to come up with this genetic test and things, and that's good. But for the most part, for years before they started doing, looking at your ancestry, we just said we're from Africa. And you say, why you say Africa? Africa is a continent. But they got ethnic groups there, hundreds of them. They speak different dialects. And Asar knows that. Sometimes you go from one country to another, you have to change your currency. We're another African country. There's no unified currency on the continent. There's no unified language. One that's generally spoken on a broad basis is Swahili. But it's a different thing. I agree with Asar. You have to educate yourself. You have to send people over there who got money, who want to sponsor some people to go over there to see how it is. And then they can build and think people can come very quietly, you know, because the white folks ain't going to let you leave. You represent a large percentage of their tax base. You spend trillions of dollars a year, they'll come up with policies and military apparatus. Say you can't go. That's what they did to Garvey. That's what they did to Eric Gleiden. You know what I'm saying? There were black people, as soon as they got out of the Holocaust and slavery, they came up with the concept, let's go back to Africa. They got books on it. All I'm saying, it's a possibility, but you have to build. It's a building project with young people who don't mind going. As most people are too invested in this country, and they'd rather fight for the nation here than to fight to leave or go to another country. And some people rather go to Cuba. I mean, they rather go through. They may not want to go to Africa. They may want to go to one of the Caribbean countries. You know, Yolanda Reed. So I know Yolanda there. They've been in St. Croix for years, even though that's considered part of America, a territory. But they, I mean, it's a deep thing, man. And like I said, I appreciate the conversation today. But the strategy has to be realistic as far as getting people to go. As Asar said, me and him up in age, young people who ain't attached are invested. That you got black people living over there now. You had black people out in the 60s that went to Africa to get away from COINTELPRO. That's where Jahjaga Pratt went. You remember a brother that, I think he was in Tanzania somewhere. And I think he married the brother's relative. And they built a little colony over there. You have Yusef Ben Israel, who went to Israel and started the Black Israelite. We've done these things, but on a small basis. And you got the Geechees living the African lifestyle in North Carolina. You got Yoruba, a colony in certain parts of America. But at the same time, you have to realize that American people are acculturated, especially American black people. And this country, as Asar rightfully said, they're not going to ever treat us right. But we struggle to make them treat us right. I mean, what I'm saying is that we have had plenty progress by struggle. By struggle. By fighting for it. Now, every inch of freedom, not just in America, in the world, we have to struggle for. And that's the way it's going to be with going to for some of them going back to Africa. We're a unique people at a unique time. And once, let's say, for instance, you do get the white folks not to stop you from going to Africa. You struggle and you break up their thing. Then there's no need for some to go then. You know, once they break up his oppression, then there's no reason to leave, travel. You know how expensive it is to go to Africa? It is expensive to travel. To travel, period. A lot of black people went to Atlanta to get away from the city. They found white people there all over Georgia. You're going to find white people in Africa. They got over 25,000 American troops in Africa in different parts. Most wars were fought on the continent of Africa, in Tunisia and all the European wars. I mean, we've been exploited, but we're resilient. We're still here. We're still pushing forward. It's going to take a long time to get these things done. That's all I have to say. That's all.
All right.
Thank you,
Mr. Rod. All right. So Jerry, what you want to end with this evening?
Well, I just want to reiterate that that's got to be our objective. No matter the naysayers, the alternative is to continue on with this struggle. And like I say, it's already been 500 years. How much longer is it going to go on? I don't see no end. And at the same time, I see that Africa is beginning to wake up. And if we're going to make that move, now is the time to go. Because the time for these white people to attack us in mass, like they have in the past, is very near. You know, as they fall in stature in the world, as their birth rates descend, they're trying to build a white society run by white supremacists. And that's what they're doing. That's what they're about. That's why they're kicking out all of these black and brown people that they're finding on the streets today. I'm saying we need to just organize. Like I say, I'm too old to go about it, and a lot of us here are. But we can teach our children and our grandchildren or anyone who will listen that that has got to be our objective. To stay here under this oppression is just... there's no future. What for? Why not go home? That's what we came from. Ultimately, we all came from there. So, you know, that's really my thoughts on it. I don't know how to reiterate it. I mean, this is something that I experienced having gone there to live several years ago. But it's come as I age, and the more I look into the history of, not the world history, the more I look into it, the more I realize that this phenomenon called white supremacy or racism or fascism or whatever name you want to put on it is a biological problem that cannot be overcome by legislation. So what is the point in struggling and asking for equality? It's not going to happen because the problem is biological. And we got to understand that. That's the importance of melanin. And we got to, once we recognize that that is the problem, then the solution is, as Malcolm put it, to separate. To simply separate. And go home, become strong. Africa is going to be, this century is going to become strong. Just like China did at the end of the last century. Africa's, this is coming, and we need to be there. We need to tell our children, our the people that's following us, to go there and be a part of that rebuilding. So that's my point. You know, things got a little passionate here for me, but you know, ultimately we are all African, even these Europeans. They don't want to admit it and own up to it, but they are, and they know it. And without any doubt, they know it. That's why they try to conceal and disconnect everything they can from Africa. Just disconnect, you know, and not own up to anything. But hey, the pyramids are there. Other great wonders are there. And the people are there. And that is the ultimate, the strongest people, the most fair, honest people in the world are in Africa. So let's go home.
I appreciate it, Brother Jerry. This is the cover of his book, Conspiracy of Silence, his latest book, Racism and the White Denial of Their African Origin, J. Asar Jubal. I appreciate you, brother, always. And it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. It's a pleasure to have everybody here participating and asking questions, making comments. It's just a wonderful thing. So, Professor Rock, are you there? Okay.
Yes.
So do we have a guest for next Tuesday?
I think I said Dr. Sensato. I got to verify that. I'll call you in the morning.
Okay. Thanks a lot. So next Wednesday, we have Dr. B. He's been on about two or three times. And the topic is the impact of entitlement culture on Black America. So that's who we have next Wednesday. And I'm going to end with Each One Teach One in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
Yeah, thank you.